Hello, welcome to the opening bell. Delighted to say we are back with a little Christmas special. There has been a delay with us getting back to your airwaves. We've moved offices. Previously, we'd be looking out the window now. We'd be looking at St. Paul's Cathedral, the financial city of London. All very nice. We're currently on Lehman Street. Is it Lehman? Lehman Street?
Lehman Street? I don't know. We've moved down in the world.
A.K.A. Ripper Street, for anybody that watched the show. So behind us is a pub called the Brown Bear, which was apparently a popular watering hole in during the Jack the Ripper era. John and I, we went in there a little while ago, didn't we?
We did.
And
we were not murdered by Jack the Ripper.
No, and they had actually She Said by the Long Pigs was playing on the old jukebox. And any pub that plays She Said by the Long Pigs is good with me.
That is my jam.
Yeah, I actually feel like I haven't actually spoken since we last did a podcast, which I think Tyson Fury was kind of still active or whatever. We were still, I think that seems to be the memory.
I don't
memory
think it was that long ago. I think Tyson Fury was in the news.
So had we'd spoken about all that. Right, so
a lot's happened since then.
A lot has been going on. The last couple of weeks we've put the finishing touches to our year-end edition. It's 80-page double issue, full of goodies. Got all our Fight of the Year awards in there and Fighter of the Year awards.
This should be our Christmas appeal. Please buy Boxing News.
Boxing
News isn't just for Christmas; it's to keep us alive in 2017.
Exactly, and I think it's always a good issue. It's always a good issue. It used to be when I was a kid, the year end issues of boxing magazines always used to be my favourite. The year end issues of the film magazines always used to be my favourite. It's good to round up. Won't give too much of it away, but you'll have an idea of who the British fighter is because of the front cover.
There is a plot spoiler on the front, but let's not discuss who the fighter is or the fighters of the year or who the fighter or the fights of the year. Let's let people read about it in the magazine.
Okay. Well, I was about to say about Carl Frampton. Just going to give him his due. It's been a good year for Carl Frampton. He has been. I think it was a clear choice for us, wasn't it? And if we just tell people before they actually read what we do, I mean, we do go through a voting process and discuss who we think was the fighter of the year, but Frampton was unanimous. Frampton was unanimous. You personally, what has been your highlight of 2016?
The best moment of 2016. There have been some good ones. I thought Crawler beating Barroso was a brilliant fight. But, you know, a great moment was Anthony Joshua becoming a world champion, because those three Joshua fights we've had in 2016, not against the best opposition, but they were big, big fights. And, you know, from the way 2017 is already looking, we'll look back on 2016 as the moment when Joshua sort of stepped up to become one of the biggest stars in British boxing.
I think what I hope we look back on 2016, because I was writing the editor's letter the other day, and you do look back on 2016, the first things, unfortunately, which kind of came to my mind were some of the issue of drugs, the really, really unfortunate events that happened in the ring with the likes of Nick Blackwell, Mike Tell, and things like that. There seem to be more of those than I ever remember in the space of 12 months. But what I do hope is that when we look back, it will be the catalyst for, like you mentioned, some good fights in 2017. Joshua has put himself in that position. He has taken some stick from the hardcore because of the quality of his opposition. But you can't. I defy anybody to knock him for taking on Vladimir Klitschko in his next outing in 2017. I'm sure there's people out there that will, because there are people out there that are like that. But I wasn't the biggest fan of some of Joshua's opponents. But I don't think you can blame him for that. And ultimately, you have to remember where he is in his career. What is he now? 18 fights.
Yeah.
And then to go into a Klitschko fight next, I think is fascinating. There's the argument that perhaps Klitschko isn't the fighter that he was, but ultimately, whichever Klitschko it is, it's a massive step up from what Joshua has been used to.
Yeah, like taking on Klitschko, in less than 20 fights, in very few rounds in his professional career. I mean, it's definitely a gamble worth taking. I think it's a great fight because it is sort of potentially a crossroads fight, potentially a passing of the torch, but you just don't know if Klitschko's going to, all Klitschko's experience, is that going to be too much? I don't think so, but it could be. I think with this fight, you can make an argument for almost any outcome. Like, you could make an argument for Klitschko on points, or Klitschko by knockout, or Joshua by knockout, or even Joshua on points being sort of messed around and stuff by the sort of older, wiser fighter.
It made the headlines this week, 50,000 tickets sold. More will be available next year. But if you look at some of the... some sites where there are tickets available, some of the prices are absolutely outrageous.
It's like the sort of secondary market.
Yeah, site. The secondary market. It's kind of a reflect. I mean, I saw someone, I don't know if it was on one of our social media pages or where it was, but someone compared boxing to Glastonbury, in that China, and I know better than most exactly how difficult it is to get a ticket for Glastonbury every year, and there does seem to be this panicky rush now to get tickets for certainly the big events, and as a consequence of that, tickets are exchanging hands for ludicrous rates. What's your take on it?
I mean, to sound like a capitalists, it's kind of like supply and demand, and if people are willing to pay these crazy prices for tickets, then I guess that's the way it is. In the secondary market, like StubHub, isn't illegal, but I think it is something, but it's up to politicians whether they want to allow something like that.
Because it has been quite controversial, match rooms involvement with StubHub, and I think, we've got Eddie Hearn on record kind of trying to explain it, and it's not a case of all of his tickets go on to StubHub. It's a very, very small percentage, but as a consequence of that, it's almost like Matchroom are involved in these prices, these inflated prices, which that's actually nothing to do with Matchroom once it gets to this stage.
Yeah, because what Matchroom set, or Wembley, or whoever set the face value of the tickets, and then that price gets hugely inflated on StubHub. Yeah. It's strange, because I would have thought of an event where it's not like 10,000 or 20,000 seats, it's potentially 90,000 at Wembley. I thought there'd be sort of enough tickets to make that, to make each individual one sort of affordable. But it's sort of like, it's like Las Vegas prices, but in a 90,000 seat stadium, and boxing in Las Vegas is kind of the preserve of the super rich, isn't it, to get in there, which is, a bit of a shame. You want regular fans to be able to actually afford to get in. But, if people are willing to spend these vast amounts of money on something, should outside regulators really step in to say no, you can't do that? Maybe.
It's certainly something that needs further discussion. I don't think we can cover it all here. But it is, I do read a lot of what our readers think, and what kind of what the thinking is about boxing now. And although it is largely positive, there are people out there that feel like boxing fans, as we know them, just a few years ago, have kind of been priced out of the market, and we've got a new crowd now, which I can see. I've noticed a change over the last few years for certain events, whereas the people that have been going to York Hall for, say, most of their lives, are just not in a position to go to Anthony Joshua versus Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah, even though they'd like to.
Yeah, which is a shame. But what can you do about it? Like you say, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one to legislate, certainly.
But policymakers, politicians could say secondary markets are illegal if they wanted to. I'm not sure. In general, I don't have a problem with people making money, but it is a shame if people can't afford to get into the fights that they want to see.
Okay, so let's move on from that. There's been, so there was that, that was some news this week. The other news, well, not the other news, there's been plenty of news, there always is plenty of news, but was this whole really quite perplexing move from the always engrossing Team Eubank are fighting, they're moving out of their, I'm told it's a temporary move out of their middleweight home, going up to super middleweight to fight Ronald Quinlan. And I would imagine BoxRec had quite a few hits all of a sudden when that opponent was was announced, for the IBO super middleweight title. Not only that, it's on pay-per-view, it's gonna it's on ITV pay-per-view, so it's to launch this new, which you would think would be quite an exciting platform, but it's a very, very curious fight to do it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an odd one. I can't see, you know, are people get, my first reaction to that fight was, who's going to pay to watch that on pay-per-view? You know, on second thoughts, ITV do have a big audience that they can market it to, but it still seems real, you know, it just seems a totally bizarre fight to launch an ITV box office. And I'm kind of more worried about pay-per-view and like pay-per-view prices and stuff going on pay-per-view than I am about the cost for fans to get into live events, because you almost accept that live events are going to be pretty pricey, especially the popular ones. But you don't want too many fight. You don't want, you know, too many fights or everything worth watching going on pay-per-view. And I know we're not there yet, but then if you have this fight as a pay-per-view, then what's to stop more and more fights going on pay-per-view? And, you know, I don't want to see the prices for individual pay-per-views going up to like American levels, where pay-per-view is really expensive, because, you know, I think boxing should be shown to as many people as possible. I'd be much happier if ITV was sort of showing a fight like this on their terrestrial channel, because I'm certain Eubank Jr. would get a huge audience that way, and then that would set him up to go on pay-per-view, hopefully, for, you know, in a big fight against a Golovkin or James DeGale or something like that, like something, you know, set up something really big. It's a bizarre one, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree with absolutely with everything you've said there. I think that my first reaction was skepticism, really. I was concerned that someone at ITV had got wind of the figures and the money involved in some of the Sky Sports pay-per-views, and kind of felt that Chris Eubank Jr. was a big name, and they've just kind of thrown this pay-per-view tag at it and presumed that it will do well with not really knowing anything about boxing, and then when it doesn't perform, they'll wash their hands with the sport. We do understand that isn't, thankfully, that isn't the case. That ITV are in this for the long haul. They plan to do lots and lots of live events next year, and they won't, again, this is just what we understand, we don't know this is fact, but they won't all be pay-per-view events, thankfully, and I think we can hope that this really is kind of an experiment for ITV. And I would be astonished, as I've got so much time for Eubank Senior and Eubank Junior, I think Eubank Junior with the right opponent is potentially one of the biggest stars in the world, not just in the country.
Big call.
He's a very, very exciting fighter, but this fight will not do big business. It will not do big business at all.
But if it did do big business, wouldn't that be worrying? Because then if you can make,
well, of course, big business, that was my next. Well, that was
Ronald Quinlan's of the world.
That was kind of the next.
We're never going to get a decent fight.
Yeah, that was kind of the next point, because I was going to say, if it doesn't do big business, then it's kind of a lesson learned. And okay, we can't stick a price tag on average contests. But yeah, I mean, you're right. What if it does do big business, and then we're in a situation where we're paying through the nose for every fight. But I think ultimately, although it is very fashionable for boxing fans to jump on something and attack it, I'd quite like us to kind of look at the positives that we've that are ahead for 2017, including this kind of development. Okay, we should not have to pay for this contest. But if ITV are true to what we think their word is, then that's a massive, massive platform for the sport. Throw in Sky Sports, throw in BT Sport as well, which have already made their, you know, they've already made their point clear of what they intend to do next year. You've got the other stuff that's going on Box Nation, and this is the best by a million miles. This is the best broadcasting outlook we've had in boxing ever in this country, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think I was speaking to Mike Costello as well of the BBC yesterday. He does the radio commentary, and he was just saying that, you know, that they want to commentate, that they want to cover all the fights as well. So whatever you can't, you know, there's a lot of negativity out there about boxing, which, believe me, I've followed this sport for a long, long time, most of my life. I understand that. I empathise with that. But also, let's just look at what we're complaining about here. The sport is being shown, is being embraced by many, many people. And I think the fact that it's being embraced and continue to be embraced despite the problems that we had in 2016, and let's not forget that some of those fights occurred on Channel 5, and the people like ITV, etc., etc., are still willing to get involved in the sport, I think that paints a very, very good picture for the future.
I'm down with that. And the solution to all these problems is don't pay for the pay-per-view, don't go to the event, just sit at home reading boxing news.
Just
give us your money.
Just do that. We'll be following it on the website. But, you know, I think going back to the Eubank, if we take the pay-per-view platform away from it, if we just strip it down and look at the fight, okay, you'd fancy Eubank Jr. very, very strongly in this fight. I remember speaking to Ronnie Davis, his trainer. I think it was prior to the Billy Joe Saunders fight, which was 2014. And he said he would like to have seen Eubank Jr. be a super middleweight back then. He just thinks his frame would be better for it. He just thinks that he would perform a lot better as a super middleweight. So, I mean, if he gets up there and he looks $1 million at super middleweight, okay, the likes of Billy Joe Saunders and the Golovkin, the infamous calling out of Golovkin is kind of over his shoulder. But ahead of him, you've got the likes of Callum Smith, James DeGale, George Groves. And that's it. It's Eubank Jr. is an interesting name to throw into what is already a very, very interesting division.
I'd love to see Callum Smith versus Chris Eubank Jr.
That would be an interesting fight. You'd pick Callum, you'd think, all day long, wouldn't you? Yeah. But you just don't know. You just don't know. Eubank.
He is good, Eubank. He can fight. He sparred with Carl Froch years ago.
Gross.
And by all accounts, he's like, I'm not saying he's like, he just acquitted himself well in the spar, you know, and that shows that he's a good fighter.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be, it's interesting times. Certainly interesting times. We put something on the website yesterday about the five, kind of the most anticipated fights of 2017, and already it is shaping up to be an interesting year. I think there were a few good fights domestically in 2016, but we really missed out on a proper marquee event. It felt like Kovalev Ward was perhaps not the crossover event. It certainly appealed to the hardcore, and I thought the fight delivered. I thought the fight absolutely delivered. I was delighted to see that. But 2017 already has events which can cross over, haven't they? We've already spoke about Joshua Klitschko, which, as ticket sales prove, will be absolutely mahoosive. But we were talking in the office yesterday when we were putting the article together. Should we include Bellew versus Hay in? Because a lot of people don't see it as an overly competitive fight, but that has generated interest. When Tony Bellew, after he'd won the title against Makubu in May or whenever it was, I think it was May, and then he started calling out David Hay, I thought, this is just absolutely insane. But all of a sudden, it's starting to make a bit more sense, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's almost like the sort of hangover of 2016 when we had too many of these big fights, but they were like crazy fights. You know, like Cal Brook was never going to beat Golovkin, Amir Khan was never going to beat Canelo. And yeah, at least, you know, Belly's not going up two weight divisions, but it's still got that kind of, it's got the fascination of, is this actually possible, rather than the appeal of it actually being a good fight and a good matchup, which is why I'm much more looking forward to something like Joshua Klitschko, because I think there's more substance
absolutely
to that fight.
No, I agree with you, and that was kind of the point I was trying to make, in that we were unsure whether to put that in there, but the appeal is there around around Beliue.
And it could be absolutely huge.
I think it will be absolutely huge, because whether or not the fight delivers, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, my when Khan Canelo kind of had a bit of intrigue around it, but you kind of break it down, and by the time you've broken it all down, you're certain that Canelo's going to win. Golovkin Brook again, another kamikaze mission. Brook performed better than many thought he would, but ultimately it was a result everyone expected. However, I do give Tony Bellew more of a shot than I gave Brook or I gave Khan, simply because of where David Haye is at in his career. Khan and Brook were going up to face people that were thought to be at their peak. They were active. Whereas David Haye, if we're honest, he hasn't been in a competitive fight since he fought Derek Chisora in 2012. And if you go back and look at that fight, you look at round four before he finished him in round five, and David Haye is starting to look a little bit uncomfortable in that fight. So I think it's going to be interesting if, and again, like underlining what you said, if you're constantly saying if in the build up to a fight, it's not always a good sign. But I think if Tony Bellew can take David Haye a few rounds, it could get interesting. The other way of looking at it is, as soon as David Haye lands a shot, and he will, it's over. And what we don't really want to see is David Haye walk out and splatter Tony Bellew in 30 seconds, because then it becomes an absolute farce of an event, doesn't it?
Yeah, we could have shades of like Haye Audley Harrison that did not go down well. But yeah, and I think, you know, sort of, you know, Tony Bellew and his team talk about Haye's punch resistance, but, you know, Haye's got much more of a puncher's chance of ending this early than I think Tony Bellew does, because I know Haye's been stopped in the past, but Klitschko caught him with quite a lot of shots, and you know, Klitschko's a heavier hitter than Tony Bellew.
Of course he is. I think a lot has been made of Tony Bellew being like a massive destructive puncher, and okay, his last two fights he's looked like that, but I'm not sure. We'll see. I think the thing for me when analysing the fight is we've got very little to go on in terms of David Haye. I think you're right to mention the Klitschko fight, but that was such a long time ago. David Haye was... We don't know how much of that David Haye is left. We've got no idea. Whereas when we were looking at Golovkin and we were looking at Canelo, at least we had examples of...
They are top fighters in their prime as well.
So what else are we looking forward to in 2017?
I guess there should be the Olympians and stuff turning pro. None of them have really made their moves yet, but that'll be pretty interesting, the sort of next generation of our up and coming British talent, because you know, the sort of class of 2012 has done pretty well, a couple of world champions out of them already. That'll be interesting.
It will. What other fights we got? We mentioned there's Garcia Thurman.
Good fight. It feels like we've been waiting way too long for Garcia Thurman. Shouldn't that have happened?
It feels like Garcia hasn't done anything at all for a long time. I'm kind of surprised. I remember looking at his record the other day, and the last couple of fights almost passed me by. Completely. It's a good one. Again, it's a trade fight. I don't think it's a trade fight at the level of Kovalev Ward, but it's a good fight to kind of look forward to. The other one, of course, we've got De Gael and Jack coming up.
Really
super
like that.
Middleweight unification could be really, really awkward for De Gael. You kind of, well, sorry, I'm being presumptuous, but my instinct is saying that De Gael will do it. But the other way of looking at it is that James De Gael hasn't got rid of these bad habits that he's got, in terms of he can all of a sudden switch off and coast through rounds during a fight that you think he's comfortably ahead in. If he hasn't got rid of those habits already, then is he going to be stuck with them? And he could potentially come unstuck against Badou Jack. And then, of course, the big one at the end of the month is Carl Frampton against Leo Santa Cruz. Do you see what can Leo Santa Cruz do differently in that fight?
Well, I don't think he's going to sort of change how he is or how he boxes. But it was the first fight was close. So I think Frampton will need to sort of improve again to make sure of a victory. I think he probably will, but you know Santa Cruz might, you know, will know what he's up against better. Will he feel a little bit less like the away fighter that he kind of ended up feeling like in New York and in Las Vegas? He probably will. But if either of them, it seemed to me that Frampton was the one who sort of hurt Santa Cruz rather than the other way around, like Frampton sort of stood up to his punches. So I think Frampton will be able to repeat the victory, but it was a really good fight.
Okay, we mentioned at the start, we mentioned Tyson Fury's name. It was a catastrophic year, really, for Tyson Fury, and a great shame for boxing, really, that the world heavyweight champion has not been able to defend his titles. As a consequence of that, the title has become fractured again. But ultimately, you know, our thoughts are with Tyson Fury, and hoping that first and foremost he can get well. Do you expect to see Tyson Fury in and around boxing again in 2017, or was that his goodbye? Was his, let's face it, it was a magnificent victory over Vladimir Klitschko.
Yeah.
Was that his goodbye?
I think he'll be back. I don't know if he'll be back in 2017, but I think over the next couple of years, you know, with him out of the sport, he's still a huge name. There's still going to be a clamour to see him box whoever by the end of 2017 is viewed as the dominant heavyweight champion, whether it's Klitschko managing to come back, or Joshua picking up a couple of the titles, or Wilder getting sort of in the mix with the other major names. Like, there's always going to be the fact that Fury wasn't beaten in the ring, and people are going to want to see him against the number one in the division. I don't know if he'll be ready to come back by next year. You know, I haven't, you know, from pictures I've seen, he hasn't looked in great shape. But surely by the end of the more, I think the more attention someone like Anthony Joshua gets, the more we're going to hear from Tyson Fury saying he's the true king. And so I think the sort of momentum will be building by the end of next year, because Fury coming back is going to be absolutely massive. You know, against anyone he fights, but especially if it's against, you know, one of the big names.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, if you can clear up certain things that have kind of been hindering his progress, shall we say, if you can clear all that up, then Tyson Fury back in boxing is a wonderful thing. I suppose the concern is that if he, because you'd like to think if he hadn't fought since November 2015. That he wouldn't jump straight into a fight, for example, with the Joshua Klitschko winner. You'd like to see him come back, but then has he got that in him to go to come back and have a training camp and then have another training camp afterwards? Has he got those two opponents in him, or is he just going to have to come back and let it all go for one super fight, do you think?
Yeah, because I think if he struggled with motivation, even for his rematch with Klitschko, and I can't, you know, if he just goes in with some, you know, some contender gatekeeper type, how is he going to be motivated for
that? That's the concern.
Whereas if he's coming back for what would be a huge stadium fight, then he surely has to be up for that.
I think the one thing in his favour, well, numerous things in his favour, but one of them is his age. He's not an old guy. It's not like he was 36 years old after a long career and he's gone off the rails. So I think that his body will forgive, you know, the way he's been living over the last year or so, if he starts to get himself together over the next 12 months or so. So what else are we thinking about in 2017? Anything else you want to talk about before we wish everybody a happy Christmas?
I think it'd be good to start seeing some sort of new faces taking over their divisions. You know, we're sort of used to the people who've been at the top at welterweight, but it'd be nice to see someone like Errol Spence coming up and getting big fights. You've got Alexander Usyk at cruiserweight, who's, you know, already looking brilliant. I think it's only had 10 or 11 fights. Someone like Poturbiev coming up at, you know, at light heavyweight. It would be nice, you know, Callum Smith that's, you know, rising at super middleweight to get a world title fight. It would be nice to see that, you know, the people who have been the rising prospects over the last couple of years, you know, to get to their world title fights.
I agree, mate. I agree. Right, it is currently midday on December the 23rd. We want to be in the boozer in 2 hours, so we're going to have to call it a day there.
2 hours.
2 o'clock. We're finishing. It hasn't been a big secret. It's been mentioned now for about a month.
But like, I've been pretending to work for a couple of hours now already.
So thanks everybody for your continued support. Thanks for visiting the website. Thanks for buying the magazine, and thanks for listening to the podcast. We will do our utmost now. We're up and running again to be to make this a weekly thing. We will be back, I think, in the first week of January, will it be? Yes, it will be. First week of January, we'll be back. So thanks, everyone, and season's greetings to one and all.